Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download the Shiny Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download the Shiny Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Shiny Radio app for free now. It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Get visibility like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
Welcome to the SEO Queen Tech Show, a podcast to help you get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through inspiration, technology, and marketing insight. This podcast is for professionals and entrepreneurs who are looking to get more customers, clients, and patients. We are broadcast worldwide on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the SEO Queen Tech Show on any mobile phone or tablet device. Also, as a thank you gift for listening to the SEO Queen, you can always go to SEOQueen.com and book a complimentary strategy session. Just go to SEOQueen.com and click on Speak to the SEO Queen to book a Reach More Clients Power session. So today's guest is a phenomenal humanitarian, entrepreneur, and just creative. Chef Ashbel has been the only American, Black American chef to cook for royalty in England and so many more things. He has a food line called Ashbel's Premium. He's an author, speaker, documentarian. He has a documentary coming out on, I'm gonna let him share it all, but Chef Ashbel is truly a force, and he's really doing things to really raise awareness about the history of food in America. And so I want to introduce to some and present to others, none other than the phenomenal Chef Ashbel McLean. How are you, Chef Ashbel?
I am great, Z. I am thrilled to be talking to you today.
Well, I'm thrilled for you to be talking here today, too, because you have a lot of things going on. So tell me a little bit about your documentary.
I just finished a documentary, Ghost in America's Kitchen, and it's a documentary on Chef James Hemmings, who is literally America's culinary founding father. Whenever you put a French fry or macaroni and cheese or whipped cream or French vanilla ice cream into your mouth, you got James Hemmings to thank you for that incredible global food. So I finished that documentary. And I am working on a project with you that I am thrilled to be working on. And it's the Josephine Baker, La Maison Josephine Centers, and a petition to get Josephine Baker recognized at this year's Oscars ceremony, because she is the first African-American actress to star in a major international film. And I am very happy to share with an incident. Actually, when I was 20 years old in Paris, I actually met her.
So when you were 20 years old and you met Miss Josephine Baker, what was going on at the time when you met her? How did you guys cross paths?
Well, the most improbable situation. I was friends with a couple, a French couple, and they had been invited to a dinner with Josephine Baker. And his wife could not a 10. She was stuck outside of Paris somewhere and couldn't get back in time. And I lived about a block away from where the dinner was being held. So my friend Ella walked up literally 7 flights of stairs because I lived on the 7th etage of this building. And it was a walk up, no elevator. And he walked up all those flights of steps and he knocks on my door. And he said, "What are you having for dinner?" And I said, "Well, I've got some great stuff. Come on in, come on in. I got some stuff and we can share it. And I got some wine and bread and cheese and we'll find some other stuff." And he said, no, I'm inviting you to dinner." And I was like, okay. And he didn't really tell me much about the dinner. He said, "Well, it's a very fancy dinner. And it was about a block away from my house." On the Quai d'Orsay, which is one of the most exclusive places to live in Paris. It was very, very rich. And we walked into one of these buildings on the Quai d'Orsay, and he still didn't say much about the dinner. It's, "Oh, we've been invited, and I'm bringing you." And so we go up an elevator, actually, and land on, I think, the 4th or the 5th floor. And you've got to imagine, this is, you know, opulence, French opulence, and their luxe beyond normal people's measure of luxury. And we entered this apartment that was, I don't know, 5 or 6 bedroom apartment. It was massive. And we were shown into a room where there were 2 sets of tables of about 5 people each. And at one table was Josephine Baker. I was absolutely flabbergasted. I was like, "Well, what am I doing here? What am I doing here?" She didn't tell me she would be here. And I knew who she was immediately because she was the light in the room. And of course, I was seated at the other table, the table that she was not at. And the woman who was giving the dinner, the hostess, literally looked as we came in and she looked me up and down like, "What are you doing here? There better be a good reason you're dragging this young black kid in here." And you know, she just, you know, went with the flow, apparently. And so we had the dinner started and we were being served and everybody's chatting away. I was thrilled to be in the room, the same room with Josephine Baker. And at one point, after they were serving the dessert, Josephine Baker looked across the room and we locked eyes, and she gave me this dazzling smile. I'll never forget that smile. And I said in English, "Hey, St. Louis girl." And she jumped up and ran across the room, arms extended, feather boas everywhere. And in seconds, I was totally engulfed in her incredible smell of her perfume, with feathers up my nose and everything. And she was hugging me and kissing me on the cheek. And she said, "Are you from St. Louis? Are you from St. Louis?" And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm from South Carolina. And my father and I are big fans of yours." And she was like, "Oh, that is so sweet, so sweet." And she hugged me and kissed me. And by the time the hostess was right behind her, pulling her, Viens chérie, to, and looking at me like, "You get away from her." And I was like, "Oh, you married well, because you're definitely from the same side of the tracks that I'm from." Because she let me know immediately, "No, get away from her. No, no." And so she said in French, "Viens chérie, viens. And whisked her away, and about 5 minutes later, she was gone, and the whole light from the room just disappeared with her. And and one of the people at my table reached down and picked up a feather from that had fallen on the floor from her bow. So the hostess said, leave it. And she was very snappy, like, yeah, that's for me. And, and it was such a shock. She was like, get out, basically. She was showing us the door and she was collecting all those souvenirs for herself. So, you know, that was my blessing to have met her in just that short time of meeting her. And when she was installed in the Pantheon last year in Paris, I was in Paris during Pantheonization, let's call. And it was so interesting to and humbling to be there. And I had been working with the American Embassy to do a dinner the night before the Pantheonization, so that the American Embassy would be honoring Josephine Baker. Well, it didn't work out well because even though our vice president was in Paris twice before the pathologization, she didn't show up. Let's just put it like that. When she should have, to honor Josephine Baker. And always an excuse of my thought of the administration and particularly the vice president was not good. And
what year was this?
And this was last year, November.
Okay.
And I, I realized that a dinner was something trite. It was empty, and I started working with two other Americans who live in Paris, Monique Wells and Kim Preston, and we formed an international organizing committee to build a living legacy to Josephine Baker. And that legacy is to build actual centers, La Maison Josephine centers, where we would foster the next generations of international art. And we'll be building one in St. Louis and the other one in Paris. And I am thrilled to be working on that. And as a part of that effort and a fundraising effort too, we're petitioning the Oscars to honor her with a special Oscar this year. And I am thrilled to be working with you and your company on getting as many people as possible to sign that petition. So it's just an honor to be working on such a worthwhile project. And also to pay tribute to the African-Americans who went to Paris. And what they did was they followed in the footsteps of James Hemings, who was the first African-American in Paris to lay down a standard of excellence that people like Josephine Baker and James Baldwin and Richard Wright and Maya Angelou and Duke Ellington all followed, even if they didn't know they were followed. And that's what's so crucial about, you know, the erasure that happens with Black American history. And we're constantly erased out of history. And you know, consistently being told that you don't matter. When in fact, you know, African-American artists in Paris not only enriched the French, but they enriched the world with their art and their creativity. And so I am
So that's awesome that you're thrilled. So I want to go back to this dinner that you mm-hmm. were invited to where you first met her face to face. So when you're sitting there having dinner and and you finally lock eyes with her, and I mean, what else did she say to you when she rushed over to the side of the room where you were sitting?
She immediately thought I was from St. Louis because I had said, "Hey, St. Louis girl," in English, mm-hmm. so that I knew that she would, you know, recognize that. You know, everybody's so formal and you know, she was this superstar, and everybody treated her like a superstar, and I was just treating her like, you know, a Black woman in America. You know, where I just kiddingly said, "Hey, St. Louis girl," and she loved it, and literally ran across the room to hug me. And
I could imagine that she felt a little homesick at some point.
Oh, absolutely!
And so, you greeting her like that was like a piece of home.
It was. It was. She was hopeful, and she was very happy. And when she hugged me and kissed me, I'll never forget that embrace. And that is the embrace that really helps me to work with others to build a living legacy for her, not just some trite dinner or name a street after her. It's stupid. And beneath the dignity and the legacy that she's left in the world, an entertainer, a restaurateur.
Right. Yeah. So for those who are not familiar with Josephine Baker, when did you start hearing about her? Did you hear about her before she started in the movie, or did you hear about her when she started doing the shows in France with the banana skirt? How did you and your father start hearing about Josephine Baker?
I had heard about her from my father.
Mm-hmm.
I had a picture of Josephine Baker on the mantle, on the fireplace mantle. And it was the only a picture of a woman that my mother allowed that wasn't family on the mantle.
And oh, wow.
That was my father's pride and joy, that picture on the mantle of Josephine Baker and of Josephine Premise. A lot of other people still don't know who that is, but she was another star, a singer, dancer, performer. And at that time, this was, deep in Jim Crow segregated South Carolina. At that time, there weren't very many positive images, especially in the media, movies, or in the nascent television that was starting at the time. There weren't images of Black people that were positive or that you could actually look up to. And so for me, it started with a picture on the mantle. And the stories of my father and my great uncle who had been in Paris in 1918, and my father who was in Paris in 1945. And I would always hear these stories about Paris, and they always ended with, "And you know, Josephine Baker's there." And for, growing up in Jim Crow, the same Jim Crow rendition of chattel slavery that mm-hmm. gripped America, the same one that's looking for a way to come back. That's what I grew up in. And so did she. So we had that commonality. She knew immediately that I understood where she was from, actually. not just, you know, the big star, but the woman who loved chicken feet and dumplings. And I grew up on chicken feet and dumplings. I later learned that was one of her favorite things from her son. You know, we had so much in common because of that common experience of erasure and exclusion. And literally fighting that to actually achieve things. And she literally was a role model for me in that respect. You know, when I went to France as a student, I understood that she was the biggest Black American that I'd ever heard of that had lived in Paris. And, you know, there were, I knew about Richard Wright and James Baldwin and Maya Angelou and all these others, but she was the light.
So help me understand, because I've seen the videos of her singing, I've seen the videos mm-hmm. of her dancing. Explain to me kind of like the reaction of the public, like when they found out that she would be somewhere in France. What was that like?
Well, millions. She was beloved in France. She was absolutely adored and beloved. She was, if you can roll Madonna, Michael Jackson, and Beyonce all into one person in France, that was Josephine Baker. And to top that off, she not only entertained them, there are many interviews of her talking about social issues, and she herself adopted 12 mixed race children called the Rainbow Tribe to just, you know, let society know that integrated societies work and they were the future. And I firmly believe in integrated societies too, where people are respected in spite of their race, religion, or sexual identity. That was a tenet of hers. And she was one of the few women invited to speak at the March on Washington by Martin Luther King. Because of that global experience and because of the respect that older African Americans who had gone through the hardest times in Jim Crow segregation. She was that international light. And you know, during World War II, she became a spy for the French resistance. And what a clever and brave woman. So the French absolutely loved her. And as Americans, I was really, really pretty ashamed of the American response last November 30th during that campanization, where for the first time, African-American culture was celebrated to the highest point in France, and celebrated by not only the president of France, but by all of the French people. And I was able to literally sit in a cafe, having a snack, and it was a working class cafe where mostly cab drivers, and there was only one young woman in there, and she was, I think, from the Caribbean, a young Black woman from the Caribbean. And there, all the other people there were men. And everybody's eyes was glued to the television, kind of looking at the lead up to the pamphletization. And they were all so proud of her. They were proud. You saw it on their faces. Because, you know, France has a myriad of racial problems. And one of the things by law, you can't count Black or Muslim or Arab people separately from white French people. So they're by law, you cannot distinguish them by law. And some of the same problems exist of racism and inequality, et cetera, that exist. They exist in America and exist in London, where I live. But the French prefer to kind of sweep it under the rug. And one of the things that the young woman kept saying, and pointing at the TV, she'd say, c'est ça, that's it. Like, right on. Like, yeah, you tell it. And she kept saying, c'est ça. And there was such a pride on her face. And I owe her something. I owe that young woman opportunity. I owe her children opportunity in the name of Josephine Baker, because that's her legacy. And I've been working with her family and selected celebrities to actually, you know, push forward this living legacy, the building Maison Josephine Centers. And, you know, when you look at a place like St. Louis, which is the myrtle capital of the U.S., there's got to be more to our hometown of St. Louis and Ferguson. There's got to be more opportunity offered. It just can't be, oh, it's the birthplace of Josephine Baker, and that's the historical marker. No, the historical marker is the legacy that she lived for. And that's what we're working on. And I'm proud to be working on it. I'm really proud to be working on it with you. So thank you very much for your help with the Josephine Maker, La Maison Josephine Project. We're thrilled.
Well, you're welcome, and I'm thrilled to be working on this project with you too. So, you know, Josephine Baker was a prolific dancer, singer, humanitarian actress, and mother, wife, spy. What and didn't she do?
And restaurateur.
Oh, wow. So she was a restaurateur as well.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that side of Josephine Baker.
Well, she had bought this chateau in the south of France, southwest France, and she went there with the Rainbow Drive, and it was big, so she opened a restaurant. And it was very successful for a while. She had a combination of French and American dishes. And people that came to visit the chateau could dine in the restaurant. So she had so many facets, and she cared so much for humanity and other people's children. Actually, she never had children of her own, but adopting that rainbow coalition of other people's children is so admirable, because she just wasn't talking the talk, she was walking the walk. And it's an example today for all of our armchair do-gooders that, you know, it takes more than, you know, putting $5 toward, oh, well, here's $5 and go away. And I gave. But to make a commitment to foster new generations of artists, to give them the ability to create, that she works so hard to level the playing field. And it's so poignant today when voting rights are restricted or being restricted as much as possible, where we have literally one of the major parties in the country, not the whole party, but a good chunk of them, leaning towards fascism and undemocratic ideas. And definitely would want to see her leave America and never come back. But that's not what she did. And I'm very happy to hold her life up as an example of excellence. And not perfect, but of excellence. And something that younger generations of women of all color, or artists of all persuasions, et cetera, could look up to and see that they can make a difference. And for example, that there wouldn't be a Beyoncé if Josephine Baker didn't pave the way. Period. That's the thing that I can stand in Beyoncé's face and say right away. There wouldn't be a you, period, without her.
Yeah, Josephine Baker, when you look at her dance videos, what strikes me is how modern her moves are. It's people are still dancing like this today.
Well, that just remind you that innovation and creativity survives. It survives wars, horrors, pestilence. And that's the real mark of a star. Not these manufactured stars. You have a hit record and you know, you have a couple of dance moves that you choreograph to death with another group, She was out there on an international stage alone in her banana skirt in the 20s when, you know, when societies were much more closed than they are now. That was the most daring thing to do. It's the equivalent of walking naked into Bloomingdale.
Yeah,
that's the equivalent to that. Okay,
she definitely, you know, just reading up her biography and looking at her performance videos, I see like this free spirit, this creative spirit.
Yeah,
she was just really open to just making people smile.
She
was a true entertainer. I mean, she sang, she danced, she cared about others. She was so empathetic. And I'm amazed at how she was also a spy during World War II as well.
Oh, absolutely.
That to me, that's mind-blowing. She was really famous for more than, I would say, 40 years.
Oh, yes. She literally, her performances just before she died in, I think, 75.
Yeah, it was 1975.
She was spectacular show. I mean, the last show that she was doing it before the night she died, it was an incredible costume where the headdress itself was more than 10 pounds. And she pulled it off like a star without a glitch, okay? And then later on that evening had a cerebral hemorrhage and died. But she literally, you know, gave everything to the public and created that entertainment illusion that, you know, is missing today. You know, you can't see Mariah Carey doing that. Because it just like, it takes a multitude of talent and conviction, not just a one-trick pony. I can sing. Well, so what? Is what I say. Look at this, sing, dance. And, you know, people say triple threat. She wasn't even a triple threat. She was just an all-consuming artist with a wonderful social heart. And that's how I see her.
Wow. So I want to go back to her participation in the March on Washington. Mm-hmm. And her involvement in the civil rights movement. Where were you the day of the March on Washington?
The day of the March on Washington, I was in South Carolina. I was 13 years old. And what is really leading up to the March on Washington, there were buses, there were two buses that left from Sumter, South Carolina, going to Washington for the march. And it left from Lincoln Brock's house. He was a local builder, and he was a businessman who was young. He had a beautiful wife, beautiful family. And so many people looked up to him because he was a leader and somebody to espouse. And he organized the two buses that left from the field beside his house. And my job the days before was to carry food to the buses and people that couldn't go. It was $20 round trip to go on that bus. And being, you know, most of America was segregated at that time. They couldn't stop on the way to go to Howard Johnson's or McDonald's on the road or no, that was impossible for Black people. So you had to take your own food with you. So the people that couldn't afford to go sent cakes and pies and chicken fried hard so that it would survive the 2-day trip up there without spoiling, and pound cake, you know, no potato salad, no kind
wait,
of
wait 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 a second wait a second I have a question. So mm-hmm. if you fry chicken hard, you don't have to refrigerate it, it'll survive.
Yeah
you, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because Madison Avenue has told you, as soon as it's done, throw it in the fridge or you're going to die. And that's just complete crap. Okay. And African Americans who had to travel on segregated transportation knew that. And they had to take a shoebox lunch. So in that shoebox would be either fried pork chops or fried chicken, but fried hard so that you literally didn't, it didn't mean that you fried all the moisture out of it, but it would keep for a couple of days without refrigeration. And you had a thermos in there, which either gave you something cold to drink or something hot. And you had real homemade pound cake. That was the meal. Pound cake and whatever meat or chicken or fish. So, you know, you weren't taking barbecue ribs. You weren't taking, you would, the shoebox lunch had a specific thing where everything didn't spoil and could be eaten at room temperature. That's
wow.
So many people survived on that. And I myself, visiting my father in 1963, taking the bus alone for the first time from South Carolina to New York City, my mother had packed a shoebox lunch for me as well. So That's the shoebox lunches are a big part of American culinary history too. But, you know, bring it back to Josephine Baker. These are things that she would have recognized. She would have recognized the Jim Crow crap from the 20s that survived in the 50s when I was growing up. Yeah, she would have recognized that. And the fact that she rushed to hug me was an affirmation of all of that. And that,
yes, it was.
She knew that I knew where she really came from.
So I have to ask you, because I think Josephine Baker is quite a style and fashion icon as well.
Wow, yes.
So what was she wearing that night?
Well, she was wearing some form-fitting gown or dress. It was definitely down to her ankles. And she was, you know, she was, at that time, she had to be over 50, I'll say. Mm-hmm. But she was vibrant and beautiful, and she had these incredible feather boas. And that was how I remember her, in an incredible feather boa. And literally with the smell of the most expensive perfumes in the world. And that, you know, that was her style. She was the best dressed woman in the room. Literally nobody else looked at any other woman in the room.
Oh, wow.
Because she sucked up all the air.
She sucked up all the air.
Every bit of the air in the room. And that, though, when she left, it was a vacuum. You really felt you were in the presence of real stardom, and somebody who was unimaginably famous. But she was so low-key and affable, and she literally made a point of putting everybody at ease. That's what I remember about her. And that
definitely. Oh, wow. That's awesome. So, how can people sign the petition and learn more about the centers, Les Maisons Josephine? Is it centers, right?
Yes. Well, when you get the petition, you're going to be getting the petition in social media. And when you get it, you can click on who the principals are behind the international committee. Mm-hmm. And now we have an international advisory committee working on the project too. And all that information will arrive in your email box or on your Instagram. And I encourage as many people as possible to sign it and pass it on. We're looking to get, you know, at least 5 million signatures so that we could alert the Oscars committee and Will Packer, the executive producer of this year's Oscars, to really consider honoring Josephine Baker with a special Oscar for her achievement of being the first African-American actress to star in an international film. Amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely amazing. I mean, her story, her legacy is just incredible, inspiring, and from her children to her artistry, it's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and the thing that is so special for this moment is that she worked all of her life for integrated society, where people are accepted and respected regardless of their race, their sex, or their sexual identity or religion. That's the tenet of a democratic society. And she is literally the heroine that we need at this moment. So like-minded people should be signing this petition and encouraging their friends all to sign it. And to really pay tribute and to honor this legacy with something that's alive, that lives through the generations, and not just, oh, she was a great dancer, and oh, she had great style, and oh, she had a leopard too, and great fast car, she loved fast cars. Yeah, all of that. But the core of this woman was her heart, and she believed in the democratic principles of inclusion and respect. And that's where we are at this moment, where it is so crucial to actually affirm that that's, particularly in America, and in France as well, the same dark forces loom in France. And this affirmation of, no, this is not us, but this is. That's what's so special in this moment, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
That's awesome. Well, on that note, I want to say thank you so much, Chef Ashwell, for sharing your meeting of Josephine Baker and the impact that she's had on the culture. To learn more about this effort, you can always go to vote2honorjosephinebaker.org to learn more. And I just want to say you've been listening to the SEO Queen Tech Show podcast to help you get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through inspiration, technology, and marketing insight. This podcast is for professionals and entrepreneurs who are looking to get more customers, clients, and patients. We're broadcast on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the SEO Queen Tech Show on any mobile phone or tablet device. Also, as a thank you gift for listening, just go to SEOQueen.com and book a complimentary strategy session. You can go to SEOQueen.com and click on Speak to the SEO Queen to book a 15-minute Reach More Client Power session. Chef Ashbel has been my guest for today, sharing his experience with the iconic Josephine Baker, who was born in St. Louis, who impacted the world with her artistry, singing, dancing, and acting, the first global superstar to Black American to star in a movie. And she is definitely being honored. Make sure you sign the petition. And Chef Ashbel, do you have a final word you'd like to say?
I'd like to say that this is an honor that Josephine Baker richly deserves. So I invite the tech community, along with social media mavens and just regular folks, to really pay her that tribute, because she well deserves it. Thank you for really for all you're doing, also with helping and being a patron to the organization. So thank you very much, Z. Your example says a lot, okay?
Thank you so much. And I'm so glad I could be a part of this, because I definitely want to spread the word about positive, inspirational entrepreneurs and artists to the world. And so this actually helps us to do that, this partnership. So thank you, Chef Ashbel. And to everyone listening, thank you for listening to the SEO Queen Tech Show. And until next time.
It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Get visibility like never before. The traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Receive the perfect leads. like never before. No traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download the Shiny Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download the Shiny Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Bashani Radio app for free now.